The West Live. The West Live. With Ben O'Shea. Brought to you by the WA Local Government Association. What's your happy place?
Now, as we mentioned, news today by one of WA's most senior doctors that the risk of blood clotting from AstraZeneca is 5 to 8 times higher in the 50 to 69 age group than previously thought could seriously impede the vaccination rollout. Joining me now is Professor of Public Health at the University of Sydney, Julie Leask. Professor, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
And now, you've advised the World Health Organization on vaccine uptake. Will this new information from the WA Disease Control Directorate advisor, Paul Effler, increase hesitancy in over 50s?
Look, it could. But I think there's just an underlying group of people who are very concerned about the blood clots, whatever the rates. They're still rare, but they are serious. And we've heard about this death, tragically, of a woman aged 52 from a blood clot related to the vaccine yesterday. And, that's hard to hear. It's sad to hear. It's hard to hear that vaccines can cause any illness or death. But we're always, and the public are doing this as well, weighing that up against the benefits of being vaccinated and the protection from death and illness from COVID itself.
Yeah, and I think that's the reckoning that a lot of people are trying to do at the moment, because they're looking on one hand to this tragic death this week, and then on the other hand, there is not a lot of COVID in our community. Obviously, there's an outbreak in Victoria, potential in Queensland as well, but overall, you'd have to say Australia has done so well against COVID. Do you think that has made it even harder to sell AstraZeneca and its rare risks to the over 50s?
Yes, I think that does make it harder. Although, even if you have a lot of disease around, if someone's really worried about vaccine risk, they will still not have that vaccine. So, and people also know that it's not just the right now we're looking at, it's the future. And the fact that COVID will come to Australia, we will get outbreaks. The variants now that are circulating are more infectious. And eventually, all of us our bodies will encounter this virus eventually throughout our lifetime. So we are looking here at a risk at one point in time against a benefit that will be over a longer period. I mean, we may need boosters, but there is a long-term benefit for vaccine that we've got to consider. And yet, we look at our risk in Australia right now, and it's not that high for us. But we know that we're just holding off this disease just.
Mm. Well, you said a couple of things there that really struck me. One was, it sounds like, and it's something that I guess I haven't thought of, but it makes perfect sense, that when you're looking at the rate of COVID infection in Australia over time, you seem to be saying that eventually it will be about 100%.
Yeah, my colleagues who are very close to this, they're vaccinologists, are saying that all of us will encounter the virus, SARS-CoV-2, in our lifetimes. It's here to stay for the time being. We're not going to eradicate it from the world for a long time, if ever. And that means that vaccination will continue to be very important. And it's that single point in time that we're thinking about a risk. You know, I'm 52, I'm the age of the lady who died, and I had my AstraZeneca vaccine 2 days ago. And I know a lot about these vaccines. I've looked carefully at the trials, I've looked at the post-licensure safety surveillance. I'm on a number of advisory groups. And I made a considered decision to have that vaccine. And I did it for a bunch of reasons. It is a personal decision, but it's also a decision we make on behalf of the wider community, because having the vaccine will reduce our risk of transmission to others. Mm. So it isn't easy when we make these choices in life. I think the public are able to make them, and we do it all the time in life. We make decisions about risks. We make trade-offs around risk all the time with medicines, with treatments that bring us benefit, even with crossing the road, even, you know, if we go skiing, you know, we take a risk for the benefit. So people are adept at managing these decisions, but for some, the risk of the vaccine becomes very important for whatever reason.
Mm. And so even knowing what you know, all the research that you've done in your career, when you rolled up your sleeve to get that AstraZeneca jab, was there even a little voice inside your head with that worry of the rare blood clotting?
I did think about it a bit. You know, this is obviously a very personal decision and we all make decisions differently. I did think about it. I did consider it. But I was very keen to get the vaccine. I'm very grateful that we have a vaccine at all, because last year it looked so bleak. And we've got vaccines available to us, and they're pretty good at preventing severe disease, you know, up to 100%. So there's, you know, in some of the studies, there's no risk of death if you've from COVID, if you've been vaccinated. That's a damn good effectiveness. Mm. And I know that I will then, I'm taking a collective decision. And I'm also trying to be a role model and put my money where my mouth is, because I am a supporter of vaccination. So there's a whole lot of reasons there for me personally. But everybody will make their own decision with a whole bunch of different considerations there. And I know that from our research that there are people who are thinking about reducing their own personal risk of illness, reducing that anxiety about going about everyday life and worrying that you're standing too close to somebody or you're on the train or whatever. You're helping protect those in your family and community who are more at risk of getting really sick from COVID. And it's also eventually going to make us a more open nation and able to travel more easily and reunite families across our international border more easily. So there's a whole lot of benefits that I think people weigh up when they're also thinking about risk.
Mm. Well, you touched earlier on how hard it might be to change someone's mind if they've already made the decision that they're not going to accept that risk. And I'm curious to know, what does your research tell you in these situations where we know there is vaccine hesitancy in the community, the over 50s who might not want to get the AstraZeneca jab, is there any amount of public education campaigns that will be able to change their mind, do you think?
It's very unlikely. You know, I've heard from quite a few of the people. This is a group. I think it's probably not a large group, but they feel very aggrieved that they can't get the Pfizer vaccine if they're over 50, and they're seeing younger people get that vaccine. And that's because it's likely that the risk of getting clotting from the AstraZeneca is higher when you're younger. There's a limited supply of Pfizer. So the decision makers have had to weigh these things and make this very difficult recommendation. And it's not easy for them either. And so there are people who are over 50 who are angry. They can't get that protection they want right now. They don't have a choice. They see it as being unfair that younger people who are at lower risk from getting really sick from COVID are getting the vaccine. And I think it's very difficult to shift someone who's feels like their values are being attacked. However, I think if, you know, we are having conversations in our everyday environment with people, understanding what their specific issues and concerns and barriers are, what their intentions are right now. Are they going to wait for the Pfizer? Are they going to not have a vaccine at all? Where they're at, how fixed they are, hearing them out, acknowledging them, validating them, letting you know, helping them get information, letting them know what you're doing. And if it's appropriate, letting them know what you'd like them to do. You know, I think it's okay to say, I can understand that you're worried about this risk. It is serious. It's rare. I'm worried about your being vulnerable to COVID. I'd love to see you get the vaccine, but of course, you know, that's not going to come between us in our relationship. It's just something I'd love to see you do. And I think it's okay to do that, to be advocates of vaccination without a really heavy-handed approach when people are fearful and hesitant.
Mm. Do you think it could make a difference if, because we know that the older cohorts are more vulnerable to serious illness from COVID, if the federal government now maybe said, okay, we have supplies of Pfizer let's open it up to the over 50s to allow them to get it? Do you think that's inevitable? Is that the only way we're going to move past the vaccine hesitancy in the in those older groups?
I think it is. Like, if you just simply do the maths, we'll eventually have enough doses of Pfizer for 20 million people, all going well with supply, by the end of the year. So that means that all Australians, because we have about 20 million people who are eligible for the vaccine in that over 16 population, all Australians would have an opportunity to have the Pfizer vaccine if they wanted. Now, I still recommend that people get vaccinated now, and because for some age groups that means that AstraZeneca is the only choice, I still recommend that occur because that protection is important for all of us. However, there are people who are going to wait, and they can wait. It's just that they do take this risk, if they wait, of delaying the protection from COVID, and they have to weigh up those risks.
Mm. And a lot has talked, there's a lot of spoken about the, you know, the over 50s when it comes to vaccination. Is there much research being done into the Indigenous community? Because from what I hear, they have a huge hesitancy in getting the jab as well, and they're considered among the most vulnerable.
Yeah, I think we've got to be careful with assumptions there. I'd like to see data on the proportion of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are planning to have the vaccine, you know, all the data on intentions, and to be speaking with communities themselves. I think it's probably better that you ask an Aboriginal person who's connected with communities about those perspectives, but I certainly think they are important questions to ask. It's a very important perspective to have. And the great thing about Aboriginal communities and Torres Strait Islander communities in Australia is that they have taken leadership and controlled COVID so well in their communities by that very early proactive leadership that occurred through the community-controlled health sector and through communities and elders themselves. So there's huge strengths there, and I guess that's also why I don't tend to label Aboriginal people as being vulnerable, because in fact there's a lot of strengths there that we've seen play out through the pandemic so far. But I think all of us should adopt a sense of curiosity about how things are going with Aboriginal communities, because this is such an important population in terms of them being more vulnerable to COVID disease itself, or being at higher risk of COVID.
Mm. You said something then that that just made me think a little bit more. So when we talk about hesitancy, when we talk about it in the media, we say, you know, there's hesitancy. We do polls. We say, you know, there's 30% hesitancy in the community. Do you look at that sort of that sort of polling, I guess, and do you consider it to be your sort of hard evidence, hard data, or do you look at that as being, you know, maybe a bit vague and not the sort of thing that you would personally rely on in your research?
It really depends on the data. I mean, everybody, when looking at polling, should be, if they're interested, should ask, what's the sample? Does it represent the relevant population? So in this case, the entire population of Australians over 16. How carefully did they collect that information? What's the margin of error around the estimates? You know, is it plus or minus 3%? And there's a few things as social researchers we look out for. I certainly have been looking to, for example, data from the Australian National University and the ABS, who have good representative samples. And a survey from the ANU in April suggested that about 75% of people said they probably or definitely will have the vaccine, and a further 9% said they were vaccinated already. So that actually put the probably not and definitely not group at 15%, which is smaller than we've heard from some of the polls. So we just got to be careful with, you know, polls. There's polls and there's polls. And I think the newspapers should have a lot of more transparency around how that data is collected in their reporting, so that we're confident that we know this is actually a picture of how people are thinking and feeling
Yeah, certainly lots more that needs to be researched and thought about on this topic as the vaccine rollout continues in Australia. From the University of Sydney, Professor of Public Health, Julie Leask, thanks for helping us break down this issue and make some sense of what we're seeing in the community.
You're very welcome.